Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Bruno Barron, liberal John McCarron, healthcare consultant and executive Michael Condren, and we'll also hear from Illinois Congressman Peter Roskam from the Ways and Means Committee. Our program tonight coming from our home base at the offices of the Museum of Broadcast Communications on Chicago's fashionable Near North Side, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We'll be talking a lot about politics for the next couple of hours, and we will focus our attention primarily on healthcare and the healthcare debate. And we will begin by talking about what transpired last week when the healthcare summit took place with the president and leading Republicans debating for and discussing the issue of healthcare for over 7 hours on television. And I don't know if anybody watched all 7 hours of it, but certainly there was a lot of coverage of it. And Mike Condren is our executive, and his profession is kind of watching the healthcare debate. So, Mike, nice to have you with us.
Thanks, Bruce.
When you look at that discussion, do you think any minds were changed either from those who attended the summit or, most importantly, for those watching at home?
Well, thanks for having me on, and I do think at least there was some clarity for those watching at home. One thing that became pretty clear is there continues to be a great divide among Democrats and Republicans. And when you think about what this administration ran on with respect to change, it was to transcend essentially Republican ideals and Democratic ideals. I think the American public that got to view that really saw that there's some commonality. There's about 80% within this bill about what Republicans and Democrats can agree on. The problem is there continues to be a lot of posturing around that 20%. And what troubled me the most coming out of it was there seemed to be more a positioning than mediation to getting to a solution.
John McCarron is our guest. Do you agree with what Mike just had to say? Is our liberal Democrat tonight?
I do, although that there might be a potential agreement around 80% of the substantive matters is probably irrelevant, because I think we're moving into a period, and in fact we have been into a period for some time, where we're in a hyper-partisan situation where consensus building is no longer the game. I mean, we're in a game here, I think, of demonization, and I think the Republicans have been very early to pick up on that, and the president has been very slow to pick up on the fact that the best strategy is attack, attack, attack. And you cannot play defense, especially when your only defense is explaining things that are very complicated.
Why is it irrelevant to agree on 80% of the matters? And what's wrong with passing 80% of what they agree on? And if so, what would happen? Would things get better or would they get worse?
Well, because we're playing in the Senate with this supermajority needed to block off or to move to cloture, to stop filibustering. And because the Republicans know that, and they're playing that to fairly well, and their game is not to, let's say, redraw the bill so we can have that 80% consensus move as legislation. Their game is to make Barack Obama look bad. End of game.
Bruno Barron is our conservative this evening. Bruno, your response to what John had to say. Is it all about politics and one-upsmanship?
First of all, thanks for having me on. I appreciate being on, too. No, I don't think it is. I think Mike is right. There is a strong ideological difference between how to solve the problem. The agreement is that there is a problem. As far as attacks go, certainly the Republicans have been doing their job pointing out the problems that are with this bill, and they are ideological in nature in the things that they're pointing out, and everybody is attacking who they think needs to be attacked. I mean, when the president gets on there and says, as he did earlier in this debate and over the summer last year, health insurance, and there's people who are losing their lives, and there's people dying in the streets, those are all political attacks. Everybody's been engaging them in them on this debate for a very simple reason. The stakes are very high. And I would go so far as to say that if either the Democrats or the Republicans were actually interested in transcending partisanship as Barack Obama ran on, we would have some kind of a bill. But instead we're getting what is probably a very, very ideologically extreme bill that has been morphed into something that nobody likes except for the powerful interests that purchased it.
But if you – I want to focus on the 20 – everyone sort of agrees that maybe 20% is what people really don't agree on. If you divide and you look at the 20% of what those issues are, if you say that's where the divide really exists and where you're not – there, no one – nothing is going to be changed there. Mm-hmm. My question to you is – if there was a vote on the 80%, at this particular moment in time, mm-hmm. would the Republicans not want to support even something they agreed with because it would be giving a perceived victory to Barack Obama? And is that more important than dealing with the issue itself?
I personally can't speak for any one Republican or what I would do. I know that I would like to, if I saw a bill that was a good bill, I'd be one of those people saying I'd vote for it if it got halfway, if it split the baby or something like that. But I guess at this point in time, the way you ask the question is very insightful. At this point in time, with an election year coming up, I don't think either party would vote for a compromise bill.
Right. I think the fear among all Democrats right now is they're trying to do everything they can to reach across party lines and bring Republicans in to vote. And I think you can almost take to the bank that you're not going to see one single Republican vote for this bill. Now, set that aside. At the end of the day, you're still going to have some type of vote. It's going to be a majority rule. There's obviously some procedural issues about whether it's in the Senate going to be 60 votes or whether, you know, we'll be able to move forward some other way. But what's most important is the president is moving towards embracing some Republican ideals, and I can understand how the administration is frustrated. When you offer the largest middle tax cut in this bill, that seems like an ideal that we can all embrace. And that's part of what's involved in health reform and what's involved in the president's bill. When you offer an exchange, not government-provided health care now, but now an exchange where people can go out and get their own insurance, that seems to be a Republican or it transcends an ideal beyond a Republican or Democrat ideal, but rather is an American ideal.
And in your view, what you've just described, that's part of the 80% that you think there's agreement on. So my question to you, from a political standpoint, why don't the Democrats come back and come up with a bill that just deals with the 80% and pass it?
Because
they will tick off some of their core constituency who, you know, they really want the stuff that's in the 20%, but at least the president would be able to say, here's health care reform.
Well, here's why, Bruce,
isn't that a potential trick?
There's a fundamental
good point.
That 20%, however, there's a fundamental disagreement on two major issues. One is coverage for all Americans and universal coverage. And what actually is a shame is if you look both at Democrats and Republicans, neither bill covers everyone. And then there's some other problems that go along with that, too. But at the end of the day, if you're going to get to universal coverage, the 20% is substantive. And then pre-existing conditions, we can talk about when we come back, is another key issue.
1-800-723-8029 from coast to coast and border to border. If you watched the healthcare summit, your reaction, were you proud of the way the Republicans went toe-to-toe with the president? Do you think the president got skunked? Anybody get skunked in that discussion? 1-800-723-8029 from Chicago. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar Center, how may I help you?
Yeah, I just woke up and my car was stolen.
I hate that you had to call us under these circumstances, but I'll be happy to assist you. Are you in a safe location?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe this. The car was in the driveway. My wife's car was behind mine. I come out to get the newspaper. Her car's out in the street. So they pushed her car out to get to my car.
Oh, no. Do you have the stolen vehicle report number?
550.
If your car is stolen, OnStar can use GPS technology to help recover it.
Police Department.
I have a location on a stolen vehicle. It's just off of Riddler Brook Court. It's in a subdivision. It's currently stationary.
Thanks, OnStar. We have 3 units going out there.
This is Pete.
This is the OnStar Center. We have located the vehicle. Police should be contacting you shortly.
Okay, thanks so much.
Stolen vehicle assistance is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
From Daytona Beach, Florida to Des Moines, Iowa, you're listening to Beyond the Beltway, 1-800-723-8029. Thanks for joining us tonight. We've got callers on the line already. Let's head to Doug, listening to us in Iowa. Whereabouts in Iowa? You're listening to us on XM Satellite Radio. Whereabouts in Iowa, Doug?
Oh, I'm about halfway between Des Moines and Chicago.
Very good. Well,
keep a big stretch.
Keep your eye on the road, but go ahead with your question or comment.
Bruce, this argument for health care can't be concluded or even begun until America understands that the purpose of the argument is how do I get somebody else to pay for my health care? People say, I can't afford my prescription. I want somebody else to help pay for it. I can't afford that operation. I want somebody else to pay for it. I can't afford the insurance. I want somebody else to pay for it.
Bingo.
On the other end, if we adopt any health care, it will have to be rationed because there's not enough money in the world to pay for all the knowledge and technology that's available to diagnose and treat illness. We can keep life going indefinitely now. We don't need hearts. We can take care of that artificially or transplants. We don't need skin. We don't need blood. We don't need lungs. We don't need kidneys. There is no limit to the amount of money that can be spent to keep a person alive.
Doug, everyone around the table is nodding to certain things that you said, so I want to go around the table and give everybody an opportunity to sort of respond and chime in. First of all, John McCarron, our liberal tonight.
Well, I think the fundamental problem with health care, and it's one that I probably disagree with my Democratic friends on, the fundamental problem is not that we have so many people uncovered, although that is a problem. The fundamental problem is, as you state, it costs too much. And yet people want other people to pay. But the fundamental problem is it costs too much. And you put your finger on one of the reasons why. It's the galloping advances of technology. However, when we say we're going to set up some expert panel or commission of physicians, chemists, whatever, to do a cost-benefit analysis on what treatments and drugs and whatnot are most efficient and are worth the money, suddenly the Republicans start screaming, death panels, death panels. So it's hard to apply cost-benefit analysis to Affairs Medical.
Well, Mike, I think it's great, Doug, that you called in and you hit a nail on the head exactly what was transpiring in the summit and where there was the most sense of agreement, and that was among generating cost containment and coordinating care. And one of the things that struck me the most in that, forget about death panels and anything else, was that everyone around that table had a story about waste within Medicare and waste within government as well as commercially provided insurance. There was a study that was referenced where I believe it was 20,000 people with chronic conditions were found to have on average, multiple chronic conditions, have found on average to have 16 medications prescribed to them. And when their care was coordinated and we spent time with those patients, it turned out roughly half of those drugs that were being taken were unnecessary or were working against each other. And what was amazing to watch in the summit was between President Obama, Senator Coburn, a clear level of agreement about what needed to happen next to address those issues. Not necessarily just fraud and abuse, but practical, common sense approach to being able to care for those people that amount, the 5% of the people in Medicare that account for 50% of the costs.
Bruno, our conservative.
Well, I agree with what Doug was saying. I mean, first of all, he's right on the ideology that everybody wants somebody else to pay for their costs. And he's also right on rationing. There is more of a demand for health care than there is for the ability at this moment to provide it. And that's one of the biggest problems there is that government has caused that problem more than government could ever solve it. Here's a question for everybody out there. And if you want to debate this, debate it this way. Single payer is where the government rations your health care. Third payer with insurance companies is the third-party insurance company rationing your health care. And health savings accounts, health management accounts, and giving you a tax subsidy to manage your own health care is you rationing your health care. All of you out there listening should ask yourself, who would you rather have rationing your health care? And I submit you're better at it. Go to HSAs.
Thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Max, listening to us in Cedar Park, Texas, on KLBJ. Go ahead.
Thank you. I guess one of the things that I have to mention, given your distinguished panel, each of them framing their given slant None of any of this really in the whole establishment of this conversation tonight was once the American people mentioned. And the American people, I believe, or at least I secretly hope, are genuinely opposed to this and have begun to find out rather accurately that the beneficiaries of this legislation, regardless what face you paint on it and the adjustments you make and the minutia of it, benefits the insurance companies. And why are we having this conversation about the so-called crisis? It takes on multiple dimensions, not the least of which is, shall we say, the illegal penetration of this country by others, illegal immigration. And the overburdensome involvement of the federal government in things such as this for decades. So the conversation should be one, I think, centered a little bit more on substance in terms of why these problems have developed and why we think we have a problem and why, more importantly, we believe Congress should be in charge of making these decisions when, in fact, they've shown over and over again to do exactly the opposite of what people have elected them to do in terms of their votes and so on. So,
a couple of quick points there, because you raised some valid issues. But most importantly, to keep in mind, with respect to the American people, there have been a number of polls, and they're competing polls right now. Some show that most Americans are frustrated with what's happened in healthcare. A recent poll came out this weekend that said 68% of the American population want to see something passed with respect to health care, but given the complexity of it, there's very few of us who actually understand what's going to be passed. Finally, a point to raise here is that let's not lose sight of the fact that this candidate, our president, ran on health reform as his, if not key issue, I would say is the key issue, and he owes it to the American people to deliver on that promise.
Mike, thank you very much for your call. Let us move now to our VIP line, where we're joined by Peter Roskam, who is a veteran Illinois congressman, a member of the Ways and Means Committee. Congressman, nice to have you with us on Beyond the Beltway this evening.
Hey, thanks, Bruce. Great to be with you.
Question for those, and I'm not asking you to give this answer in 100 words less, 1,000 words less, or 5,000 words less, but maybe put it in some concept that everyone listening to the program can understand, because the Democrats appear to be moving forward for some form of reconciliation. That's the way they see victory, through reconciliation. What exactly does that mean, given where all of these pieces of legislation are right now, in the Senate as well as in the House?
Well, it's very, very controversial. Reconciliation, while it sounds like just a procedural argument, what they're doing is contemplating not passing this massive overhaul of one-sixth of the economy with 60 votes, but instead kind of shortchanging that process and using 51 votes in the Senate. And I think if they do that, actually, I think if they go that direction, the public will not forgive them. And here's what I mean by that. You know, I think the American public, Bruce, was generally hopeful when President Obama first started talking about health reform. But remember, it was in the context of trying to bring costs down and increase accessibility. And over the course of these past several months, and now it's been almost a year, the public has listened and listened and listened to all the joint session speeches and rallies and, you know, the Super Bowl prelude, all of the interviews, and they've said, we don't want this. Now, if Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid and Barack Obama decide that they're going to go in this direction of literally jamming something down people's throats that they've said they don't want, I think November is going to be tumultuous for the Democratic Party.
Okay, here's my question, Peter. You are a lifelong Republican. If you believe that reconciliation will lead to political suicide by the Democrats, why aren't you urging them to do it? Because will happen is, as you say, if you are correct, the American people are going to be repulsed by it. They will throw them out in November, and then you can come back next year and you can change it because be in control.
Bruce, here's why. Country is more important than party. And if this health care program gets put into place, $1 trillion of spending, the Congressional Budget Office says this is going to increase the cost of health care, they're going to tax medical devices, they're going to fundamentally move health care in a direction that I believe puts us on a pathway that we can't come back from. So I say, look, as much as a partisan Republican as, you know, different people are, this is actually not helpful for the country. It's not going to make us more competitive. And I think, look, overwhelmingly, the public has said what they want us to do is an incremental approach in Washington. They want us to break these bills down and take on one at a time. And if we focus in on, you know, for example, the president acknowledged that purchasing health insurance across state lines is a good idea that can bring costs down. So it's a matter of negotiating that particular bill, but he acknowledged it's a good idea. Well, for the life of me, Bruce, I don't understand why he's not willing to break it down.
Mike Condrum has a comment follow-up for
Hi,
you.
Hi, Congressman. I really appreciate your comments. I thought a little bit about what the president said at the summit, which was a big concern about piecemeal approach, because if you step on one side of the equation, you're not necessarily able to make movement on the other. And really, a stronger approach is to take a more universal cut. I'm curious why you wouldn't be a supporter of that.
Congressman, well, that's the question. We do have to pause. We've got to sell some product right now, Congressman. You understand the importance of that. We're going to put you on hold. We're going to give you 3 minutes, and we're going to come back, and then we're going to get your answer, okay? Congressman Peter Roskam from the Ways and Means Committee joins us on our VIP line tonight on Beyond the Beltway. From coast to coast and border to border, this is Bruce Dumont, back shortly from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
I'm sorry, emergency.
Yeah, we're going to need an ambulance out here. There's a real bad accident here.
All right, sir. I'm contacting the 911 center.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a vehicle crash airbag deployment at Swan Lake Road. They are saying there are injuries. I'll conference you in.
Who is injured?
Oh, I don't know. My knees are broken. That's a hell of a wreck.
Dispatch, I'm showing the maximum reported Delta V was 18 miles per hour from the front.
Okay, thank you. We have an ambulance and first responders on the way.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
The ambulance is here.
I do hope everything will be okay with you, sir.
Okay.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago with Peter Roskam of the Ways and Means Committee, a Republican on that committee. And Mike Condren, before the break, asked you a question, Congressman. We'll give you a chance to respond to it now.
Yeah, I think it's a question that it's a premise that President Obama laid out at the health care summit, but it's a false premise. In other words, the president said you've either got to do everything because it's so disconnected or you can't do anything. Here's why it's a false premise. I offered an amendment in the Ways and Means Committee which would have essentially gone after $50 billion in fraud by having the Medicare create a point-of-purchase review, just-in-time data review, kind of like the financial services companies have done on our credit cards. To make a long story short, Charlie Rangel and Nancy Pelosi rejected the amendment. I got a call from the White House czar, healthcare czar, who said, you know what, this is a great idea. How come it didn't pass? And I explained to her the politics of the House, how the Speaker really wasn't interested in Republican ideas. And now my idea has been incorporated into the president's bill. Now, there is no reason why we can't go after $50 billion worth of fraud and waste within Medicare, and that's somehow connected to every other component of health care. It's a false premise. It's not a Republican idea. It's not a Democrat idea. It's not regional. It's not conservative. It's not liberal. It's smart. And so this is where I just think, with all due respect to the president, when he does basically a seven-hour seminar at the health care summit and lays out these sort of arguments, it is absolutely incorrect to assert that it's all related and that you can't break it down. You could absolutely go after some liability reform. Even if it's not what the president wants, he acknowledges that defensive medicine is driving costs down.
You can
absolutely pursue those other things without taken over a sixth of the economy.
We have one last question from your old friend John McCarron of the Chicago Tribune.
Congressman, I agree with you totally on Medicare fraud, but yeah, I'm curious about one thing. You said that the country wouldn't forgive Obama if he went the reconciliation route, yet it seems to me the country has already forgiven the Republican Congress of days past for going the reconciliation route on doing welfare reform or even on the Bush tax cuts. I mean, isn't it just sort of just another way of doing business when the Congress is so evenly split?
I don't think so, and here's why. Number one, the Congress is not evenly split. There are super majorities in both chambers, and one of the reasons that supermajority or 60 votes came down was exactly based on this massive government program that the country has just overwhelmingly rejected. And those are the things, as significant as welfare reform was, as significant as the Bush tax cuts were, and they were significant, it was nowhere near the order of magnitude. So I think the lack of forgiveness is going to come from the clear signal from the public that they don't want this, and now a Democrat majority that basically says to the American public, we have a wonderful plan for your life, and we're going to jam it down your throats even though you don't like it. And that's where I think there's going to be fury if that happens this November.
I need a yes or no answer. Do you think that the health care reform, some form of health care reform, is going to pass Congress this year?
Oh, Bruce, I think we're breaking up. I can't hear you. I don't know. Here's the crowd that can answer that question, and that is Blue Dog Democrats who are looking around the landscape. And I told this to Greg Hines at Crane Chicago Business. I said, after the election in Massachusetts, there were a lot of Blue Dogs that were walking around the House floor like they had just come out of an automobile accident, and they're dazed and confused and walking around on the highway. So it's that group that's going to make a decision. And already Speaker Pelosi has said she's willing to have the herd thin. So your guess is as good as mine. I think for the good of the country, though, we'd be much better off incrementally approach this thing. And I disagree with President Obama and think that we absolutely can.
Okay, Congressman, thanks very much for being with us. That's Peter Roskam, a member of the Ways and Means Committee, Republican from the 6th District, which is in the suburban western suburbs of the Chicagoland area, for joining us briefly on our VIP line. And before I go back to the discussion, I just want to take a moment because there is a link to Congressman Roskam. His chief of staff is a young man by the name of Brian McCarthy. His brother, Kenton McCarthy, has been a frequent guest on this program probably for the last 12 years. He moved to Arizona not too long ago, so he hasn't been on as frequently as he has. But the reason I bring that up tonight is that they lost their dad this past week, Vern McCarthy. And I've known Vern McCarthy since I was a young boy back in 1964. Vern McCarthy has worked the vineyards for the Republican Party in DuPage County as a precinct committeeman, a conservative long before it was fashionable. I mean, Barry Goldwater conservative from a long, long time ago. And again, nurturing his sons to go into politics and become involved in politics is something that's something that he was very, very proud of. Again, he had a stroke a couple of weeks ago and ultimately lost that battle. So Vern McCarthy, a good personal friend, a longtime friend of this program. I cannot tell you how many times over the years Vern would give an instant review to programs we did, always encouraging. And again, the loss of a good friend and also the father of two great conservative Republicans who one works for Peter Roskam and the other frequently appears on this program. Let us go to Marvin, listening to us in San Marcos, Texas on XM. That's San Marcos. Isn't that where the Bobcats are from?
So to tell you the truth, I'm not sure. I'm just passing through. I think so.
Okay, well, I was passing through there. They've got a college in San Marcos, I believe, and the Bobcats play there. But go ahead. I digress.
Okay. I just said Connor a while ago commented that the American people don't want health care reform, and I consider myself an American person, and I think we need health care reform. I personally think the single payer is the only thing that would really work. But that doesn't seem to be an option, Ted. I think what they're talking about passing is better than nothing, which is apparently the other option.
Is it better than nothing, John? Do you agree with that?
Yeah, on balance, I do. But I'm one of those left liberals who was very disappointed that we don't have. I'm not so crazy about single payer. My wife likes single payer. She's listening. But I thought the public option would have provided a little bit of competition for the private insurers who will also participate in this, challenging them to keep their costs down. So I am sorry that fell out of the plan. And as far as the president's latest idea, setting up some sort of commission that would ride herd on insurance premiums, I think that's probably an idea whose time has come and passed. I just don't think that's the way the world works anymore.
Bruno.
I got to disagree, and I will do it every time with this idea about single payer. I mean, just this last week, we had the premier of, was it British Columbia or Saskatchewan, had a heart problem, came to America. Here are these Canadian politicians, head of a state, up, same as a state up there, a province, turns around, has to come to America for his health care, and praises Canadian health care on one level, but comes to the one remaining health care system in the world that's still producing the intellectual mind and effort behind all of the breakthroughs. Now, it's not saying that other nations don't do the same. As I said earlier, single payer is the government rationing your health care. Insurance is the insurance companies and PPOs and HMOs rationing your health care. Here's my question for every single payer person out there who supports that kind of idea and all these regulations and insurance caps and capping premiums and everything like that. If there was a way to bring down costs that actually empowered the American people and the conservative and the libertarian views here about health savings accounts and health management accounts and giving people the tax subsidy to give them control over their health care dollar, if it's possible to fix the system using those kind of mechanisms, they are going to far, far outperform single payer, and everywhere they've been tried, they work.
But let's put it in context. That's what you want, and that's what you're vehemently opposed to. But single payer is not part of the debate right now.
Not only is it not on the table, Bruce, but
it's
been off the table for a while. But what's interesting in all this, and let's not lose sight of the fact that what health reform is about right now is the fact that we've got approximately 47 million people that are not covered right now. And what's happening with those people is they're using the ER for their primary source of health care, and they're waiting for an urgent issue before they're presenting themselves. And that's really where we have to all focus and transcend all the party lines, is to get to a resolution that addresses working up the chain of wellness to address those issues before they have an urgent problem.
I want to go back to the political question that I asked Peter Roskam, and I want to put it in context. I want to get everybody's response, but I want to start with you, because I think I know your answer to this, John. And that is, there was an election. Health care reform and promises of health care reform was a central part of what Barack Obama went around the country talking about in the primary and in the general election, and he won the election fair and square. Now, you have Democrats that say, okay, we have an election. Let's argue them, the Democrats, they win control or maintain control of the House and the Senate. So they've got the votes. What's wrong with jamming down the throats of the American people what the Democrats think is right? And if the American people are repulsed by it because they've changed their opinion of whether that's a good idea, let them pay a price in November. Let them get their butts booted out for 20 or 30 years. But it seems to me that we've already had one election on whether or not the American people want this. And the people that showed up at the polls, they voted for Barack Obama, they voted for Democrats, they said they wanted Democrats in control to do things, and the things they were promising, they now seem to be, they're getting weak in the knees about delivering it. I want to get everybody's reaction to that. Hardball politics, up or down, pass it if you got the power. Back shortly from Chicago.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess, just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
When do you take a cold seriously? When your nose runs so much you can't catch up? When it hurts to swallow and even more to talk? Ignoring the signs of a cold won't make it go away. Catch your cold earlier and treat it earlier with Tylenol Cold Rapid Release Gels. They relieve your painful cold symptoms fast, so you can rest. Because the sooner you start treating your cold symptoms, the sooner you can feel better. Feel better. Tylenol Cold. Use only as directed.
Bruce Dumont back. Congratulations to our neighbors to the north, the Canadians. Beat the United States in hockey overtime today. It was one of the best hockey games I've seen in a long, long time. But the Canadians beat the United States, so a silver medal for us and a gold medal for the Canadians. And you can just imagine how disappointed the Canadians would have been had it been the other way around. Since it's their game, they should do well. John McCarron, I was on my soapbox. I was saying, you know, I know you were believing me as I was talking. You were cheering me on, so put it on the air.
Well, I agree, and I think conservatives must agree that in the tradition of Edmund Burke, we elect people, and they go forth, and they make decisions, and they so we're not ramming anything down anyone's throat. We're carrying out the will of the election. But a funny thing happened, Bruce, after the election. The Republicans decided on a just say no strategy. There's something going on called talk radio, believe it or not. And the rhetoric on talk radio is selling. It's more and more popular. The general economic ambiance has been one of crisis, which the president inherited. And I know we're not going to talk about who did what on the economy, but people are angry and they're scared. That underlies, no matter whether we talk about health care or whatever, people are angry and they're scared. And victory in the future will go to them who are able to capitalize on that anger and their fear. And frankly, the Republicans are doing a much better job of it. Well,
I'm going to battle you on because people also admire, I think, people admire people who stand by their principles. And liberals, a core of a liberal believes, I think most liberals believe, they know more, they're smarter than the average Joe. And if they're doing that, this is a case, they're putting their political philosophy on the line and say, you know what, we've got the power, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, if some people lose their election because of it, doesn't that make them a better person?
Well, conservatives actually are the ones who believe, because we've been told by a congressman and by one of our panelists tonight, that they understand what the American people want. So I wouldn't put the liberals are smarter and whatnot. It's the conservatives who are claiming to be.
But wait a minute, there was an election, as Barack Obama was saying to John McCain. He lost.
What I'm saying
he couldn't make a case for what he wanted.
What I'm saying is there's a very dynamic thing that's going on. It's like the 30s. There's fear and there's anger. People are losing their jobs. They're worried that their children aren't going to have lives that are going to compare to what the parents have achieved. I mean, this is relatively new.
What you're saying about your party, your president, you're saying they don't have the stones to vote their conscience.
I'm saying in the Senate of the United States, where it now takes 60 votes out of 100 to avoid filibuster and get anything through, that you do have 4, 5, 6 Democrats who are looking at what's going on in general and saying, hey, I dare not go out on a limb with President Obama.
Mike.
Let me address this head on, because I think what's most important here, I think, Bruce, you make a very salient point that you run on a platform, you need to follow through on it. I don't view it's crammed down either. What I do think is, as opposed to the fear issue, this is a big issue. This is, healthcare is a monumental, complicated issue, and what this administration would like to see and has tried to do is reach across party lines, transcend, and try to get some agreement so that as we reflect on this 5-10 years from now, this administration can say, look, we did everything to work together on this. And what they're seeing is no ability or no eagerness to cooperate, and therefore you move forward with your platform and let democracy rule. A good friend of mine.
So you agree with me?
I do
have the vote.
This Wednesday, a good friend of mine, Bill Choslowski, wrote an article, an op-ed in the Chicago Tribune that addressed this issue, which is true leadership. For President Obama to address true leadership is to transcend a Democratic and Republican ideal and really focus on an American core value. And those core values he campaigned on, which was reforming health care. And he owes it as a duty at this point to move forward and follow through on that campaign.
Bruno.
That's great rhetoric. Unfortunately, I'm not buying it. First of all, I think one reason people bring up single-payer health care, and I want to go back to the other issue.
I want to go back to my question first, because single-payer is not on the issue.
I'll answer your question. The answer is Chris Christie, Bob McDonnell, and Scott Brown. The Democrats played their card. They played it the way they wanted to play it. This talk about how Barack Obama tried to be so nonpartisan and tried to do something great for the nation didn't see it that way. The nation saw a guy who threw together a 2,000-page bill with all kinds of regulations in it, all kinds of quiet little back-channel ways to take control of people's health care, and they rejected it. Now, was some of that done based on strong rhetoric and strong wordplay by some Republicans? Yes. Was some of it done
because... Yeah, but also there's statewide issues. I mean, Two of those things are statewide issues. The only one that I'll give you on is Scott Brown, because he talked about being a vote against the health care bill.
Well,
but that's in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts,
actually,
where they already have it.
As someone who just went through a race here in Illinois, I can tell you that gubernatorial politics and even at the state level, health care and the national issues is what's driving people to pay more attention now. So there was a great deal of energy, even in state races.
So you don't believe in a politician following through or a party following through on their platform?
No, actually, I'll tell you this. I would like to see...
It's like the same thing with the conservatives.
I'd like to see...
They want to overturn Roe v. Wade, work harder on it.
I'd like to see the Democrats push this through and see and let them stand on their laurels, because as Peter Oscom said, I think they'll pay for it. The problem is some of them are afraid because they're going to lose elections.
And Bruno, the president pointed that out at the end of the summit. November is coming. Let us move forward. If Republicans want to join us, we're going to accept your ideas. We're going to adopt them into the bill.
No, he's not.
That's what he said, and I believe that's what's
going
to happen.
And I don't.
I just say call the vote. Call the vote. The battle will go on. And, again, talk radio is going to weigh in. But you know what? Talk radio is just one slice of the electorate.
I'm with you, Bruce. He's got the
votes. They don't have to feed anybody. They only have to feed the mouths of the talk show hosts.
He's got the votes. Let's have the plan.
And on that, we have to sell some spots so that I can be fed as well. 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, we're talking about health care. And I want to get your response. If you're a Democrat listening to this show, you voted for Barack Obama, you voted for Democrats. Do you agree with what I just said? Have the vote. You won the election. You got the power. Ram it through. You agree or not? 1-800-723-8029. I'm Bruce Dumont from Beyond the Beltway in Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency, murder, any injuries? I don't know. I'm in a ditch.
I am going to get the 911 center on the line.
Emergency line.
This was OnStar emergency calling. I have a vehicle crash on Highway 16.
What happened?
I hit black ice. I've got a headache.
I have her east of Highway 97. I also have a latitude and longitude.
Okay, that helps. Are you at the ski hill?
Yep.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
Help is on the way. We have fire and EMS heading out there to you.
I am still on the line. Do you have a blanket you can put on?
Yes, I had a couple of quilts in the back seat. I think they just got here.
All right, then please know we're here when you need us.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess. Just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Tuna melt and fries.
Mmm, good.
Tuna melt and fries with 3% cash back.
Mm, this is great.
Tuna melt and fries with 3% cash back and no interest.
Mmm,
delicious.
Anywhere you eat, from takeout to sit down, you'll get 3% cash back when you use Chase Freedom today. Avoid interest on everyday purchases by paying in full with Blueprint. This is more than a cash back card. It's freedom. Enroll now at chase.com/freedom.
Chase cards issued by Chase Bank USA NA and are subject to credit approval. Restrictions apply.
When do you take a cold seriously? When your nose runs so much you can't catch up? When it hurts to swallow and even more to talk? Ignoring the signs of a cold won't make it go away. Catch your cold earlier and treat it earlier with Tylenol Cold Rapid Release Gels. They relieve your painful cold symptoms fast, so you can rest. Because the sooner you start treating your cold symptoms, the sooner you can feel better. Feel better. Tylenol Cold. Use only as directed.
Do you really think all batteries are the same? Or do you think one stands out from the rest? The Duracell Copper Top. And while you get what you pay for, usually holds true. Now with Duracell, you can actually get more than you pay for. Because now the most popular packs of our AA and AAAs give you 20% more batteries for the same price. After all, when it comes to good value, it just has to work. Always reliable, always efficient. Duracell Smart Power. Trusted everywhere.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with hour number two of Beyond the Beltway. Tonight featuring commentary by conservative Bruno Barron of the Heartland Institute, liberal John McCarron from DePaul University and a contributor to the Chicago Tribune for many, many years, and healthcare consultant and executive Michael Condren. And our program phone lines are open, toll-free at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. We have a lot of callers on the line. We've been talking about the healthcare summit, and one of the questions that I asked in the wake of the healthcare summit, we had asked for your reaction to the summit, if you saw it, whether you thought the one side did better than the other. And the general consensus was that initially, I think the Republicans were fearful that maybe they were going to get skunked by the president and the Democrats. I don't think that happened. I think that the end of the 7 hours, and certainly the general consensus was that it was a discussion of a serious issue by grown-ups, and maybe we should have more conversations like that. And also, I had asked the question that, and I wanted to get reaction. We've got Bill listening to us in Youngstown, Ohio on WKBN. Let's bring him into the discussion, because I said the Democrats, they won the election, they won the presidency, they won both houses of the Congress, and so why don't they get their way? Bill, you agree with that, don't you?
Yes, I do, Bruce. I'm a long-time listener.
Thank you.
I'd just like to say, you know, we wasted enough time on this thing over here, and I couldn't stand listening to Lamar Alexander say, let's start from the top again. And that's completely uncalled for. You know, they need to take a vote right now, and instead of waiting for a bipartisan agreement here. And as the president said in his concluding remarks at the summit, you know, we'll let the people vote in November, and you can see where they'll stand then.
Now, stay on the line, because I want to get your reaction as other people respond to the question. I mean, you come from Youngstown, Ohio. That's a real strong Democratic community, Mahoning County. And your congressman, Congressman Ryan, Tim Ryan, has followed Jim Traficant. So that's about one of the safest Democratic districts in the country. But Bruno Barron, our conservative this evening, do you believe that the Democrats would lose control of both the House and the Senate if they pushed this, the existing bill, the reconciliation mechanism through?
Well, if you look at the surface polls, I think it's pretty clear they'd probably lose the House. When you've got Nancy Pelosi sitting there saying it's worth losing seats to get this passed, it always makes me a little bit suspicious. I mean, I'm suspicious of people in the smoke-filled room on both sides of the aisle. And I'm asking myself, what are the Democrats banking on that they're basically saying, we're going to pull the trigger on this, and we'll just take the shots? Parties don't do that. Parties are much more shrewd, especially the Democrats. They might be ideological, but they're no dummies. I guess what I'd say is, I mean, they do have the votes. If they really honestly feel that, I think that they're actually trying to play a game of chicken with the Republicans, and they're going to say, we're gonna pass this, and we're gonna fight you on it through the summer.
Isn't it safe for her to say that, because the reality is they'd have to lose, what, 55 seats?
I think it's 52 or something.
So it's a significant number of seats. But she basically says, you know, sometimes you've got to getting back to what I said. Sometimes you've got to follow your principle, and you've got to vote one particular way or not.
Look, I'm looking at what happened in 1994, and if you look at some of the precursors of 1994 compared to what's going on today, the Republicans gaining back the House is easily within their reach, if it isn't already in their reach.
Mike Condrum, just on the politics of it.
Sure.
Do you agree that they run the risk of losing both the House and or Senate?
I do. I actually think it's a catch-22. I think if they don't move forward, that they lose the House and they possibly lose the Senate. And that goes back to that poll that was cited by even Nancy Pelosi this week on ABC, said, look, 68% of Americans want us to move forward. I think the biggest fear right now for the Speaker of the House is whether she'll be able to go back and get those same votes that caused the House bill to be passed in the first place. One technical issue, but is worthy of a lot of debate that you're going to hear about this week, is an amendment, the Stupak amendment, that involved abortion. And while there is no public funding for abortion in this bill, there was a concession within the House that there would be restrictions put on insurance companies about their funding for abortion. And that has been removed in the Senate bill. And so what you're going to hear a lot about this week, and I think get ready for this among the partisans, a debate about whether Democrats will come back in and vote for the House bill, given that this Stupak amendment is likely out.
John McCarron.
I'm
the politics of it. Do they lose both the House and the Senate
No.
if they ram this through?
No, if they were able to ram it through, and I think, you know, Mike points out that they might not be able to because of what's happened over the last two or three weeks. But no, you got to remember, Bruce, the memory of the American politic is not that long. Other things come along, like, you know, the recession, the job situation, North Korea, Iran, China. I mean, things could happen right after an up or down vote that everybody would go, like, healthcare? Oh, yeah, was there a healthcare bill? I mean, things move very quickly, and the election really is a long time away in political time.
And so if they were to lose it, I mean, the way the Republicans are framing it is because, and they're quoting the polls all the time, they're basically suggesting that if the Democrats ram this through, they may kiss control of Congress goodbye for a decade or two.
Well, that was the Republican plan. Remember, they said, their leaders said that this was going to be the Waterloo. They were going
right.
to be the Wellingtons here and turn this into the Waterloo for Barack Obama. So, I mean, that is their plan. But what I'm saying is that I think whether it goes up or whether it goes down, it's a long time till the next election. A lot of things are happening. The country is in a dire recession. I think other matters will come along.
Sometime in the course of the country, there are moments in time that men and women of principle have got to stand up for what they believe in, and they've got to suffer the slings and the arrows of the voters. And is this one of those times, Mike?
I think it is. And it's so troubling if you're the Speaker of the House, if you're Obama, if you're leading in Senate, as Senator Durbin is, because the beautiful word you want to be able to say is this is a bipartisan effort. And what's killing the administration right now is that they're not able to say that. The House bill, I believe, was passed with only one Republican vote, and it's pretty clear that that's likely to fall off as we move forward.
See,
so
I think another...
that's the problem, is if you can't get this as a bipartisan movement, you risk the issue that whether you're successful, it's going to take 10 years before this law really has some impact, and you're going to have a problem.
In an ideal world, it should be bipartisan. But sometimes, if you can't...
You're right. You're absolutely right,
you
Bruce.
You get to the point where it's up or down. You know,
But what if it's a bad bill? I mean, I don't think it's...
If it's a bad bill...
Right.
Certainly, the Republicans have called the attention that they think it's a bad bill. Between now and November, they make the case that it's a bad bill. And then, you know what, if they're successful in making that case, then all of the polls that Republicans are quoting They should sail to victory and take control of the House and Senate.
And the question is, what's next?
And I would hope
health reform is still needed, whether Republicans are in control or Democrats.
No, but the point is, if it's been passed, then it's up to the new Congress, depending on what their numbers are, to go in and reform it and change it and repeal it. And the question is, have they got the votes to do it? The campaign continues. Back shortly from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar emergency.
My son's having a seizure. I'm on the freeway. Help me.
Okay, you're going to have to pull over so I can give you the ambulance your exact location.
Okay, I'll pull over. Please hurry.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a young lady on US 101 in Highland. Her son is having a seizure. I have 911 online.
Ma'am, we're sending an ambulance to your location.
Baby, look at mommy. Look at me. Look at mommy.
Ma'am, let your son seize, okay? I'm going to stay on the line until we find you.
Okay. I got my emergency on your show.
Roll him on his side when he starts coughing.
Okay.
Just push the OnStar emergency button, and a specially trained advisor can send help to your exact GPS location.
I hear the paramedics.
They're on the scene, OnStar.
Okay, thanks a lot.
Emergency services is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
From Bakersfield, California to Lafayette, Louisiana, you are listening to Beyond the Beltway on America's great radio stations, as well as Sirius and XM satellite radio. Let us go to Sylvia, listening to us in Winnebago, Illinois, on WLS, our flagship station. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Well, one thing there does seem to be bipartisan agreement on is that neither of them will demand that any of our lavishly funded state medical schools will produce more doctors to reduce the, you know, cost of health care and make it more available. Why don't they double and triple the number of doctors we're producing every year with our tax dollars?
Well, it would be nice. It would be nice if they would produce more general practitioners and internists who actually want to deal with family health problems. Unfortunately, producing more doctors is sort of like producing more lawyers. You know, they all want to be specialists and go out there and make a lot of money, and they become specialists who are real good at, writing prescriptions for exotic services.
And John's comments really support why overall, Sylvia, the system needs to fundamentally change. Incentives need to change to encourage doctors to change the way they practice, to really be incented. And Senator Coburn, this really is where there's bipartisanship, to change the incentives so that if physicians have the ability to provide wellness and get rewarded for it. And right now we have a system that quite frankly doesn't do that.
And they could easily double the number that every state, college, and university admits to medical school, and you'd have more doctors of any, you know, whatever they want to specialize in. They won't let them in.
We had this discussion a few weeks ago, Mike. I don't know whether you were on the program when we talked about it, but again, if the Democrats were to get their way and ram this through, and 30 million more people are on insurance, there's going to be a need for more doctors. I mean, where are these doctors going to come from? This caller makes a very good point. How long it takes them, 8 years to get through medical school?
To John's point, the doctors are there. The professionals are there. Look, I talk to them. I work with them every
really
day.
Really, there's enough of them with 30
there
million
are enough,
more people?
There are
patients?
Enough physicians. There are enough folks in this country and folks that service this country to be able to provide the services they are needed. The question is not that we need more volume. It's that we need better quality. And so the docs right now are being incented to do a high volume and to really see people for a very short period of time. And if you can enhance quality, by the way, it's not necessarily just physicians. It's nurse practitioners. It's a team of medical staff that work together that's patient-centric. And that's really what we're missing right now, is the approach to practice right now is carving up so that each specialist is focused on one person with multiple comorbid, multiple serious conditions. Could have a heart failure doctor. They could have a lung doctor. They could have a general practitioner. And then they have people that substitute for them. And that's why we're having all of this waste, because they're all providing their own solution as opposed to having a one approach, a team-based approach that provides wellness, that addresses the concerns. And so it's not that we need more doctors. It's that we need to change the approach to how we provide services.
And Bruno. And there's a perfect thing for that. It's shocking. It's called the market. And we're being told that the market doesn't work. And everywhere the market is tried, everywhere that you get out of the way of the market, you can actually find it working. There is let there be competition for insurance premiums. Let there be competition for doctors. I mean, there's a reason people come here for their health care. Now, I'm not as intricately involved in this as Mike is, but there's this premise out here that it's like, oh, no, this is all too complicated for a market. The market handles complexity so much better than Washington, D.C. or Springfield, and it's been proven to do that. So do we need more doctors? Let there be more doctors. Do we need less doctors? Here's the thing, like nurse practitioners. Doctors go out and lobby to make sure that there's no nursing clinics. Hospitals go out and lobby and make sure that you can't build a specialty hospital because they don't want specialty hospitals. None of these people should have the right to
we
go
have
out
a
and,
health
to, and stop the market.
We've got a health practitioner on the line, David, listening to us in Joliet on WLS. Go ahead, doctor.
Yeah, Bruce, I enjoy your show.
Thanks. Listen
as often as I can.
Good.
And I just want to mention, I'm a healthcare practitioner. And I think the general public is totally ignorant of the work going on in the healthcare system. As a doctor, most of us get reimbursed between 20 cents and 30, 40 cents on the dollar of billable fee. Now, how many people out there are going to take a 60 and 70% pay cut and enjoy what they're doing? In my opinion, anytime anyone says, oh, I want to be a doctor, I want to make a lot of money, I say, you can make more money and less time being a plumber or a tradesman. And the way I look at it, like I told your screener, if this health care plan is so good and everything's supposed to be good for the proletariat, then give the proletariat what the elites in Washington, the Congress, and senators have, and maybe I'd be a little bit more supportive of this government health care.
By the way, when you say 25 or 30%, that's based. Where are you? Are you talking about that's what patients give you? That's what government reimburses you for or pays you for?
Reimbursements on health care services, and I'm an optometrist, okay? And I'm not talking about me. I had a health procedure. I had a GI doctor do an upper and lower GI. The health care bill through the insurance company was $9,890-something, which is ridiculous. What was even more ridiculous is when I saw that the reimbursement to the doctor and the surgical facility in total was less than $2,000. Now, when there's a billable fee of $1,000, tell me how many attorneys are going to take $250 and not take you to court because you didn't pay them. The whole situation is everybody wants stuff for nothing. The benefits to the general public are coming out of the doctor's profit. And I am very serious. You could make more money as a plumber or as a tradesperson and not go to school for 8, 10, 12 years and not be sued because somebody wants to get rich.
And, David, you make the fundamental point of why we need reform within the system and that why it transcends political issues. At the end of the day, there's a lot of, I sense your frustration, and it's appropriate. Every healthcare professional I work with feels the exact same way. People don't understand the fact that the system, the insurance, specifically the government, that how you pay, actually encourages you and incents you to double, to overcharge, so that you get something out of it at the end of the day. And that's not right, and that's what ultimately health reform needs to address if we're going to get anywhere.
Chris in Palatine on WLS, our flagship station, coast to coast. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. Good evening, Bruce. You know, first of all, I wish you would call out when a right-wing Republican refers to the Democratic Party as the Democrat Party. There is no such thing as a Democrat Party. It's always Democratic Party. So, you know, hopefully you can, you know, correct these people when they refuse to pronounce the name properly.
Okay. I'll slap them upside the head the next time.
Tell me something Democratic about it, Chris.
Well, also, by the way, speaking of Democratic, and last time I looked, you guys keep referring to ramming bills through the Congress. This is a democracy, and I believe that the majority rules. Am I correct?
No, it's actually a republic.
Okay, well, whatever. The majority still rules. Am I correct?
Except in the Senate, where
you
need six
to.
Out of ten.
You
well,
50,
Chris,
you know,
you're correct. Go
okay,
ahead.
So 51%. It beats 49%, correct?
In some circumstances, that's actually what you're going to hear about these next few weeks. It's not necessarily correct in the Senate,
and
that's what this issue with reconciliation is.
Exactly.
In reconciliation, it does. Go ahead.
There are six states that cumulatively have a smaller population than Cook County, Illinois. Those six are North Dakota, South Dakota, Wyoming, Alaska, Idaho, and Montana. They cumulatively have a population of approximately 5 million people. Cook County has a population of about 5.3 million people. So what I'm saying is you have by design an undemocratic institution called the United States Senate made 10 times worse by these arcane rules that they have that allows one senator to stand in the way of anything happening because he doesn't like something.
You know, you don't hear any of the government officials, though, or any of the senators talking about changing that or reforming
that
system.
Well, that's the next step.
Maybe it is, but maybe it's not. I mean, if you think back to the fundamental principles here of our founding fathers, is you want an overwhelming majority when you're making major changes. And the whole point of the Senate and the House is to avoid creating unnecessary laws that generally don't make sense or only 51% could drive. In this case, however, what you have now over the last 25 years is that's been eroding with reconciliation, which allows us and allows senators to have a majority vote more often that is not just based on budget issues but also substantive issues. So the question is going to become, you know, can we allow our system to continue to work as it has for years, for hundreds of years this has worked? And why throw out the baby with the bathwater?
For hundreds of years you have not had this mindless, relentless filibustering, this idea that you have a hardcore, solid minority that just says no, which is what we have today. And the only thing this is really akin to is the Southern senators absolutely filibustering and preventing any kind of advancement in civil rights, which is what they had done for decades.
Right.
And unfortunately, the Republican Party of Lincoln has now become the Republican Party of Jefferson Davis.
Well, while many of us may feel the process is flawed from time to time, it ultimately has yielded pretty good results over the course of our history. And I think as you think about health reform, you're going to see very good output here. At the end of the day, it is going to be majority rules and the president
and
the administration.
Day, what I hope is the Democrats will have some testosterone and simply say, okay, boys, you've had your fun. 51 votes beats 49 votes. We win, you lose. You know, and we'll take our chances at the election.
Okay.
Chris, first of all,
I'm on his side.
That's fine.
He's on my side.
They can play the rules. There was a very interesting article about exactly how reconciliation works and how there's one. I actually forgot to bring it today, but I found it. But someone's got to call somebody to the carpet when they say the party of Jefferson Davis. That's nonsense, and Chris knows it. He knows me. He's just bloviating.
Okay, 1-800-723-8029. Look it up, bloviating.
I have to look that up.
1-800-723 or call Bill O'Reilly and ask him to talk about it tomorrow night. 1-800-723-8029. From coast to coast and border to border, we have an intellectual barn burner in Chicago tonight. Thanks for joining us.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
OnStar emergency.
Yeah, I just got ran over by a semi. There could be injuries. There's a car underneath the semi. Please send an ambulance.
Okay, I will contact 911.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. There is a vehicle crash with injuries off of Interstate 5. The maximum reported Delta V is 16 miles per hour. I have 911 on the line.
Does anyone have any injuries?
I think I've got a concussion. I got drilled.
Okay, we have police and a medic coming to check you out.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
This guy got lucky. His car is completely totaled underneath the semi, and where he was sitting was the only part that wasn't destroyed. The sheriff's department's on the scene.
I hope that everything will be okay with you.
I appreciate your help.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. To bloviate, to speak or write verbosely and windily. It's what we do here every Sunday night. The essence of talk radio. To bloviate. We're bloviators. Our thanks to our guests this evening. And by the way, they're going to be here for another half hour. We're not saying farewell to them. Bruno Berend is here. He's got a new gig since we last spoke. First of all, you can go to his website, extremewisdom.com. and he will tell you more. He'll bloviate a little bit more on some of his pet topics. He also now is the director of the Center for School Reform at the Heartland Institute, one of the libertarian think tanks based here in Chicago.
Yes.
And congratulations on
Thank
the new
you.
Gig, and also has done some talk show work throughout his career. Mike Condrum also is here. He is president and founder of MEJC Consulting. That's a consulting firm focusing on healthcare consulting and mergers and acquisitions and divestitures. And healthcare has been in his bloodstream for a long, long time. And John McCarron also joins us. For 27-plus years, he was a reporter and columnist for many of the last maybe 15 years with the Chicago Tribune. He now does some contributing work there and also is an adjunct professor at DePaul University in their College of Communications. And again, we will be back to calls in just a moment after I mention something to those people who listened to the radio broadcast last week and who reside in the city of Chicago. And so you will be listening to this program on WLS and listen to what I'm about to say. If you heard the show last week, we had a great second hour discussion, and one of our guests was Barry Kelman, who is the president of the International Security and Biopolicy Institute, also at DePaul University. He also commented on the recent report card grading government on protecting the United States and its citizens against bioterror. We got a lot of phone calls last week. We got a lot of response to that last week. It was a radio, it was only heard for those listening to us on radio, but we did lay down that interview for our television version. And if you live in Chicago, you know there's a television version of our broadcast. That will air tonight at 10:30 on WYCC, and it will air on Monday night at 11 o'clock on all the Comcast cable systems. It's an extremely ear-opening, eye-opening discussion of a significant threat facing the country, how devastating it is, and how unprepared we are for any type of bioterrorist attack on the United States. So if you heard the show last week, I think you'll enjoy seeing it this evening. If you missed it last week, again, tonight at 10:30 on WYCC, it's a pretty good discussion, and it brings up a lot of information that I think Americans should know about. Let's go to John, listening to us on XM Radio in New York, New York. Nice to hear from you, John. Go ahead.
How are you?
Okay.
We spend, I have no idea, on how, on like, forces and the FBI and all these things to protect me against crime, whether it's murder, burglary, whatever it is. And I'm much more in danger of losing my 401k or my home or whatever it is from a health care crisis than I am from any sort of crime. Now, I don't know whether the solution is a government solution or it's a market solution, but there's no doubt, you know, I'm 55 years old, I've got six children, three of them in college, so on and so forth, and I'm also an independent consultant. And my health care bill right now is $19,000 a year. Each child and my wife and I have a $5,000 deductible, and this is the Blue Cross plan, and as soon as I hit a couple of $100,000, I'm tapped out. So, you know, I'm in danger here.
Yes,
and
sure.
When I look at the healthcare situation and I see 80,000 people dying a year needlessly, they say, in hospitals, I think the threat to the United States deserves this kind of attention. You know, and it's not like, you know, many sides of the argument, no one seems to be focusing on the threat, the severe financial and maybe life-threatening threat that we have.
John, I'm going to interrupt and let Mike respond to it. Again, we've got kind of a wavy phone call. It's not a quality call, so let's go back to your radio where you can hopefully pick us up on XM with Mike's response.
And, John, you really crystallize what is the imminent threat, and I think what this administration, what folks are trying to do right now is talk about that in a reasonable way without scaring people. And to John's point earlier that there's a lot of fear and fear issues these days, but you're right. At the end of the day, with that premium you're paying and the caps that you have, it's not sustainable as a system. 10 years from now, the New York Times issued a study today that those premiums you pay now, 10 years from now, will essentially double. And will essentially become 25% of your median family income. And that, plus the issues we're having with Medicare, where the congressional office shows in 7 to 8 years that Medicare will be bankrupt, are the reasons why this really is an economic issue. So when you have issues about people saying we really need to focus on jobs, 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 this is a fundamental issue with respect to jobs. This is why Congressman Roskam is off when he says we need to do this on a baby step, step-by-step process, because you really need to look at the totality of this issue if you're ultimately going to make changes that impact the caller.
Bruno.
First of all, that $19,000 premium figure, what makes this complex is that how much of that premium is going into defensive medicine? How much of that premium is going into not being able to buy the policy? Like if was it John who was on the phone?
Yep.
The caller, if he was able to go into an open market and say, this is the kind of insurance I want for my family, this is what I'd like my deductible to be, and I don't need to be covered for in vitro, and I don't need to be covered for XYZ, and I don't need to be all these different mandates, how much would his insurance premium be there?
But Bruno, he is in the open market. He just told us that he's with Blue Cross, that he's an independent consultant, and that is the result of what the open market just gave him. No, it gave him a $20,000 premium that caps ultimately catastrophic coverage, that also has a $5,000 deductible. At the end of the day, what he's telling you is the private system is not working for him.
And what I'm telling you is that private system not working is a function of layer after layer, especially if I'm not mistaken in New York, which has far more regulations than many other states. Now,
aren't regulations. What he's saying is in the open market, yeah, this is the kind of coverage he has.
The best he can do.
I'll defend Peter Roskam here. If he was able to go out and buy any policy wanted across state lines that met his family, he would probably be able to find a policy that cost less.
And Bruno, he's going to be able to buy this policy with the $4,000 tax credit you're going to give him to go out and get into a health savings account. I don't think one, that you're being realistic about what it costs to buy insurance, and two, that the idea that it's regulation that's causing the cost to be so high, or even tort reform. You mentioned defensive medicine, so you're saying it's liability and malpractice and that's a part of it, part of it.
To the real point here for our caller is, right now it's not mandated that he has coverage. At some point he's going to say, it's not worth it, I'm going to take the risk, and at the end of the day, everyone will end up paying for that catastrophic issue that happens for him or a member of his family.
From that's New York to Fargo, North Dakota, let's go to Mark listening to us tonight on the radio. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, gang, real quick before I lose you, the president's got two problems with this. First, he has to come up with an adequate number of votes to get this thing passed. And even if he succeeds in doing that, he doesn't have the money to pay for it. This is going to turn out to be another unfunded mandate. This is going to be another in a series of broken promises made by corrupt politicians since Medicaid and Medicare were first introduced in 1965. The promise back then was that it would be deficit neutral, would not add to the nation's debt. And look at where we're at now. $12 trillion debt, and we have $38 trillion in unfunded liabilities. This is a nightmare.
Let's let John respond.
I mean, I sympathize with what you're saying, because I think one of the things no one wants to talk about is that, yes, we do need some form of benign rationing. Yeah, I said the R word. We do need some kind of rationing here so that you can't go out and buy a automated wheelchair without paying one red cent, as they tell you on the daytime TV ads under Medicare. Somebody's got to say no. Somebody's got to say, here's what works, here's what we're going to pay for, and here's what we're not going to pay for. And I don't see much political stomach, frankly, on either side of the aisle to say we're going to do that. Because if you do, you're running a death panel.
But that doesn't necessarily mean and to Mark's point here, that, that people can't go out and still secure better coverage, and that, you know, this is why I don't like the word ration, is we live in a free economy that allows people to get something better than whatever we define the minimum standard to be. And so what I like about what this administration, what Senator Durbin made a reference to and that Obama ran on, was why don't we give the same level of benefits that we get as federal employees to everyone in the country? It sounds nice, but when you really do the math, what we're really worried about here is, are we going to be able to write that check, and are we going to find ourselves in greater deficit? We need to set minimum standards so that 47 million people that aren't being covered are covered, but we still need to preserve the right for people to go out and secure something better than whatever
right.
the government
sends
as a minimum.
Somebody's got to be operating the brakes here. What aren't we going to pay for? And you don't like the word rationing? Well, let's call it efficacy research, or something like that.
I'm far more able to ration my own care than any doctor, than any system, than anybody else, and I know these things. And there's also ways to do this with information. What I think is interesting is that everybody's just saying, oh, $4,000 doesn't pay $19,000. But the fact is that there's other regulations all over the place that raise that cost.
We have heard from North Dakota. When we come back, we're going to hear from South Dakota. Back shortly.
Since OnStar began, we've answered over 100 million calls for help.
OnStar Center, how may I help you?
Yeah, I just woke up and my car was stolen.
I hate that you had to call us under these circumstances, but I'll be happy to assist you. Are you in a safe location?
Yeah, I mean, I can't believe this. The car was in the driveway. My wife's car was behind mine. I come out to get the newspaper. Her car's out in the street. So they pushed her car out to get to my car.
Oh, no. Do you have the stolen vehicle report number?
550.
If your car is stolen, OnStar can use GPS technology to help recover it.
Police department.
I have a location on a stolen vehicle. It's just off of Riddler Brook Court. It's in a subdivision. It's currently stationary.
Thanks, OnStar. We have 3 units going out there.
This is Keith.
This is me, OnStar, sir. We have located the vehicle. Police should be contacting you shortly.
Okay, thanks so much.
Stolen vehicle assistance is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
We have heard from North Dakota. Let's head south to Sioux Falls, where Marilyn is listening tonight on KELO, one of our older affiliates. Go ahead. Nice to hear from you, Marilyn.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you for calling me.
Yeah, this is definitely a very passionate issue, and I've ran into a lot of people who never ever before paid attention to politics who are now, you know, young people, people my age. I've been involved in, like, just talking about politics for a long time, paid attention mm-hmm. for a long time. Another thing that, you know, I have a daughter who is a family practitioner, and I don't believe that people go into med school and become doctors for the money, but the money is important, and they are being just ravaged by having to hit volume in order to cover Medicare and to cover the government intrusion and tort reform and high insurance costs. It's all sort of intertwined very closely, and I think that if the government starts to intrude even more with this, it's going to get even worse, and you're not going to get more doctors. You're going to get less doctors. Mm-hmm. And there's so many other things that just bother me about this whole discussion. I'm really offended that the Democrat here is treating people that there's such an arrogancy, and Obama is a prime example of the arrogancy, thinking that we don't understand, we have to keep having it explained to us, and the biggest thing that he said is that, oh, we're going to forget by November, if they ram it in our throats, we're going to forget by November. How arrogant is that?
Well, I don't understand why you say government intrusion. I mean, if you pull apart where the money is going that the insurance company pays, your daughter obviously, you know, isn't getting enough. Most general practitioners aren't being reimbursed adequately, and it is driving them toward a more of a volume practice. So let's tear apart the bill, and I think you'd find that too much of it is going for patent medicines that really don't work much better than take an aspirin and go to bed. Too much of it is going to high-tech medical equipment, radiology stuff that they keep on inventing, and you can do this and you can do that, and you automatically have to pay.
Those are good things. I think the market controls those. the market controls that. I mean, ultrasound and MRI, those are all very, very good diagnostic
tools.
Well,
they can be, but they can be overprescribed also.
Why are they being overprescribed?
Well, because people make money when for every procedure that's conducted.
Marilyn, the other issue is sometimes you have too many doctors in the mix, and one doctor doesn't know what the other one is prescribing, and so a lot of the problems we're seeing is the fact that you're having overprescription, not by any nefarious reason, but really just by sheer failure to coordinate.
Marilyn,
well,
thanks.
And I think a lot of that too is because they don't have a chance to really spend time with those patients.
You're right.
Marilyn, you have very good instincts. Stay with them.
Thanks very much for calling. I appreciate it. Let's go to Jim in Mishawaka, Indiana, listening to us on WSBT. Go ahead. You're on the air, Mishawaka.
Hey, Bruce. Great show.
Thank you.
Life and death issue.
Yes, it is.
One quick comment and then a question. First, my comment is to all the guests, are they familiar with the World Health Organization's rankings of the top 40 countries in the world? America ranks 37. The top 10 best healthcare in the world, according to WHO.INT, all have the dreaded government health plan. Top 10 best in the world government run. Why don't we do it that way? And number two, as regards to the public option. Okay, as an American, do I have the liberty and freedom of choice to purchase my health insurance through a public option? I've been ripped off by the insurance industry, the 80-20s and the co-insurance and the pre-existing and denied claim and out-of-network and prior approval and co-deductible. I don't want to deal with the insurance industry for anything. They're not the solution. They are the problem. So do I have the liberty and freedom to take my money and purchase my health care like the top 10 best countries in the world government?
Jimmy, the answer is yes. I'm first of all, I'm quite familiar with the World Health Organization study. It's a bit of a misnomer. It was a survey done with respect to the overall health system performance, where we ranked 37th out of 191, slightly actually behind Chile, which is going through its own crisis right now.
Right.
Now, the issue, however, is, you know, that looks at the totality of how the system functions, not the fact that we certainly do have the best healthcare system in the world for those who can afford it. The issue when it comes down to the insurance companies, Jim, really gets to the issue of what this health reform bill is about, and that is to allow you to be able to make more choice by being able to shop for the best insurance that will fit your needs and also get a middle-class tax deduction while you're doing that. That seems like the best of both worlds.
Let's go to Bruno, listening to us on WLS, our last caller of the night. Go ahead, Bruno. You're on the air.
Yeah, Bruce, you know what? As a family man with a family of four, I have to budget. I don't get a bailout from China or a bailout from the government. And that being said, let's look around at these countries with these massive entitlements as we sit on record unemployment with a record deficit and a record economy hitting the tank. Greece right now with their massive entitlement is in flames. We cannot afford this. The bottom line is, if this is all great ideas and utopian ideology, Karl Marx had the utopian ideology. The truth of the matter is, this cannot be afforded, especially right now. This president needs to focus on jobs, the economy. If your house was on fire, Bruce, you would not worry whether your plumbing is flowing right. This is trouble, and we have to deal with it. I'm not a Harvard economist, Bruce, but I keep my family in the black by knowing where to cut and where to spend.
That's Bruno the caller. Here's Bruno the guest.
Well,
go ahead.
Us Brunos have to stick together. That's a very, very good point. This is something that, and quite frankly, it goes back to the incrementalism. You can do things to help people who are uninsured without going to change the entire healthcare system.
Historic show. We've never had two Brunos on the air at the same time. We've never heard from North Dakota and South Dakota the same time. How about that? Mark it on your calendar.
Play the lottery tonight.
Historical stuff. And again, congratulations to Canada for their gold medal in the Olympics. And don't forget, tonight at 10:30, television version Beyond the Beltway, Barry Kelman about bioterrorism. Great show. Hope you tune in for that. Our thanks to Bruno Barron, who's been our conservative. Our liberal has been John McCarron of DePaul University, and Mike Condrum has been our medical expert. We thank you all for joining us tonight. Tom Veracruz and Ben Stewart helped make this program possible. I'm Bruce Dumont. Good night from Chicago.
Since OnStar began, we've responded to over 100,000 automatic crash alerts.
I'm sorry, emergencies.
Yeah, we're going to need an ambulance out here. There's a real bad accident here.
All right, sir. I'm contacting the 911 center.
In a crash, an OnStar advisor can automatically receive an alert.
911.
This is OnStar emergency. I have a vehicle crash airbag deployment at Swan Lake Road. They are saying there are injuries. I'll conference you in.
Who is injured?
Oh, I don't know. My knees are broken. That's a hell of a wreck.
Dispatch, I'm showing the maximum reported delta V was 18 miles per hour from the front.
Okay, thank you. We have an ambulance and first responders on the way.
With built-in automatic crash response, an OnStar advisor can use GPS technology to locate you and share crash details, which could help save your life.
The ambulance is here.
I do hope everything will be okay with you, sir.
Okay.
OnStar is standard for the first year on 15 Chevy models. Visit OnStar.com for details and system limitations.
Shaquille O'Neal for Icy Hot.
I need pain relief that won't mess with my grip.
The new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator. Powerful, targeted, long-lasting pain relief now in a roll-on applicator. No mess, just maximum strength medicine for back, shoulders, knees, even arthritis. Massages in icy to dull the pain, hot to relax it away.
Wherever I hurt, wherever I go.
Stop pain right at the source with the new Icy Hot No Mess Applicator.
No pain, no mess.
For temporary topical pain relief, use only as directed.
Tuna melt and fries.
Good.
Tuna melt and fries with 3% cash back.
This is great.
Tuna melt and fries with 3% cash back and no interest.
Delicious.
Anywhere you eat, from takeout to sit down, you'll get 3% cash back when you use Chase Freedom today. Avoid interest on everyday purchases by paying in full with Blueprint. This is more than a cash back card. It's freedom. Enroll now at chase.com/freedom.
Chase cards issued by Chase Bank USA, N.A. and are subject to credit approval. Restrictions apply.
When do you take a cold seriously? When your nose runs so much you can't catch up? When it hurts to swallow and even more to talk? Ignoring the signs of a cold won't make it go away. Catch your cold earlier and treat it earlier with Tylenol Cold Rapid Release Gels. They relieve your painful cold symptoms fast, so you can rest. Because the sooner you start treating your cold symptoms, the sooner you can feel better. Feel better. Tylenol Cold. Use only as directed.
Do you really think all batteries are the same? Or do you think one stands out from the rest? The Duracell Copper Top. And while you get what you pay for, usually holds true. Now with Duracell, you can actually get more than you pay for. Because now the most popular packs of our AA and AAAs give you 20% more batteries for the same price. After all, when it comes to good value, it just has to work. Always reliable, always efficient. Duracell Smart Power. Trusted everywhere.